Jump Reports. We're back, season 3, episode 1. We kind of had some stuff go on over the summer where we've talked about. We've done a couple episodes over the summer, but this is it. We're officially back. We're sponsored by Jersey Mike's this year. We have some more sponsors coming on board.
Yeah.
And big, awesome things happening for the show. So we appreciate everybody that supported the Utah Puck Report. The growth of the show was, to say the least, doubted at the beginning. And it's right, Gary?
Yeah. Doubters.
The host, our other host, Gary Michaels, is here, and we're just excited to be here and know that we have a season 3 going and that we have sponsors and that we have an audience. And so we're going to make this episode, we're going to have more of a panel, because there obviously is so much going on with COVID and with the leagues. I mean, the NHL just barely finished. And we don't know when everything else is going to start. Utah high school hockey has started. The adult leagues have not started. Youth leagues have kind of started. If you're on a travel team or if you're willing to drive out of the valley to play, those things have started. And so we're going to touch on a lot of that. Special guests today, we have Ryan Kanasevich from the Utah Grizzlies, who's the assistant coach of the Grizzlies now and was a longtime player. Ryan, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
And then we also have Mason Manick, who plays in the WHL for the Portland Winterhawks and is – longtime family friend and for the show. Mason, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, happy to be back. Thanks.
And then we're excited. Nick, you've been on the show before. We have Nick Halloran, who's just finished his season up at Colorado College, or, you know, in March, I guess. And then signed, which is with the Ontario Reign of the AHL, which is the NHL. He's affiliated with the NHL's LA Kings, which until 2 weeks ago is where all of our Utah players were affiliated with. And then, you know, obviously Trevor Lewis did not get re-signed. So we'll talk about that. But Nick, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the contract.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're really excited for you. I mean, we support all the Utah hockey players. You and I go way back. You've played on the same team with my son, and it's been fun to watch you grow up, and your brother from the Air Force Academy. You guys were both on the show, and it's been fun to watch you guys go and it's just awesome. I'm excited. I'm really excited to see the AHL start. So we'll start with you in the AHL. And first, will you walk us down the path of getting signed and how did that happen? Your college season ended way quicker than anybody expected. So can you touch on all of that?
Yeah, it was a pretty bizarre time for me for sure. You know, we played our last regular season game and we were going into the playoffs versus North Dakota. And then, you know, our coach just got a call and said, the season's canceled. So it's pretty abrupt ending. Wasn't expecting it, but it is what it is. And, you know, I was fortunate to get 4 years there and get a degree. So I'm pretty fortunate for that. And, you know, I love my time there, but afterwards I still kind of feel like I'm in a weird purgatory stage of, you know, training and being ready for whenever the call is. But yeah, you know, my agent and I kind of talked and we had a couple teams fielding offers and whatnot. And it kind of just seemed like the best fit was with Ontario, the AHL team of the Kings, like you said. And it was really exciting. I think I signed back in like April, you know, pretty high jitters and, you know, going to the gym early, getting real excited. And it's certainly been a long summer just training and trying to stay busy. I've been helping my brother with his construction company and, just kind of little stuff like that, but it was fun having the NHL go and watch that. But for me personally, yeah, I've just been training, kind of getting ready to go whenever that may be.
Yeah, that's got to be tough because you typically have a all right, I'm going to train for, you know, I know I'm going to start training in June or July and then be in peak physical condition when I show up to camp on September 12th. And yeah. Now it's like October 54th or whatever. You never know. Like it's right. Just so random. It's gotta be tough. And Mason, I know you're going through the same thing, like, being friends with your parents and seeing the workouts you're going through, with the WHL, what's the latest on the WHL and how things been for you this summer?
So the latest on the WHL is we have a December 4th start date. That's, not official yet. So obviously we'll see as time goes, but as far as summer, I mean, just like Nick said, it's been long and it's hard, as you touched on, to kind of manage on when you want to be at your peak heading into the season. And so It's been, you know, thankfully this summer it's been nice. We've had guys like Nick and Daniel and Jared Pike and Josh Wesley stick around, where we've been able to put a pretty good group together, which has helped big time. But yeah, it's long, and it's just trying to, you know, keep your head in it, keep working hard, and just getting ready for whenever that may be.
Yeah, that's gotta be tough. I mean, and it's referred to the keep moving your cheese, right? Like you're a mouse in a maze, and you used to know where the cheese was, so you could work towards it, and now they've moved your cheese.
Is it a lot like being injured? You know, when you're injured, that's all you're doing is rehabbing and working out.
Yeah.
Except for you kind of have a timeline of when you're going to get back.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. You know, depending on the injury.
This, we don't know.
And then Kanasiewicz, you're the coach this time, and you've lived through every summer of trying to get ready for when you were a player. And now you're helping a lot of these players around here get ready and stay ready. How are things going with you in that realm?
They've been going good. You know, we got a little group going at the Maverick Center a couple days a week. Nick and Mason and Brickley and Pike and a couple younger kids out there. Just trying to help these guys out and keep them ready for who knows when, you know. It's kind of the world we're living in right now. And, you know, if we can, you know, help the local guys out, I'm happy to do it, you know.
So the Grizzlies, I've seen you guys have signed a few guys, and you've announced a December 10th or December 11th start date?
11th, yeah.
Okay. And it's pretty odd the way they did it. So some teams are playing, was it 75 games, and some are playing 65?
72 and 62. So just it varies basically state by state. You know, as of now, we have, I think, what, 12 teams playing the 72-game schedule. And I think it's October or November 30th, the other teams have to give an answer whether they're in or out for the season. So.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that was the deal.
It's no different than the A. Like, I think Ontario, they play, 68 games, Nick?
I think so, something like that. This season might be a little modified. I'm not sure yet.
Well, on a typical year, and then out east, I believe they play, 76, and they just go off percentages. So,
right.
I mean, you're still going to have a playoff system and all that. It's just – it's going to be weird.
Yeah.
But if we can get back to hockey – great, because it's been too long, you know.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of teams are like, man, if the government doesn't allow us to have fans in the building, then we can't afford to function. Like, yeah. We have to have some kind of income.
Well, that's, I mean, even the NHL, they're, you know, they could sustain the bubble that they just went through. But having a season, there's a lot of teams, I'm sure, that bank on that. That ticket money every night, you know, ticket, beer sales, food, parking, all that, that breaks in a lot of money for these clubs. So the minor league teams need it, you know, tenfold. So if we can't have fans, it's tough to move on.
Yeah. And that's one thing maybe fans don't understand is that minor league teams, the ticket sales and like you're talking about beer sales and food and parking, because you don't have a big TV contract. You're not on ESPN or NBC here bringing in millions of dollars. Then what you have is expenses as far as coaching and players and staff. If butts aren't in the seats, there's not money coming in to pay those bills.
Yeah, exactly.
That's tough. Gary, you've got kids playing hockey. What's going on in the youth aspect of hockey right now?
All hockey, man. I'm there 6 days a week at the rink now. So
yeah,
it's been great.
That's nice. At least you're getting to go to the rink.
We've been out at the Oval. The home rink is Cottonwoods. We play for the Junior Grizz. But we've been out at the Oval and the Maverick Center this year. But now we're kind of more – we do a few games at Maverick and we go up to Park City. But it's mostly our – you know, practice will be at Cottonwood now because Cottonwood's done.
Are parents allowed in?
They like one parent to come. At Cottonwood. Oval, they don't care. As many people, well, I don't know if as many, they probably want, but they don't put a barrier on it. You know, they don't say one parent or two or whatever. And Maverick Center is no fans for practice, but you can, if the parents can go in and watch games.
Yeah. So. And Knauswitz, we've talked before, and we had, when we had Jared Youngman on the show, we talked about the, but that's a huge building, right? You guys have a lot of capacity for fans, and you typically, let's say you get 6,000 fans, but the rink holds what, 15,000?
No, I think it's like 10-2.
10-2. All right. Yeah. So let's say you get 6,000 fans, and I kind of joked around a little bit, and I'm not trying to offend the Grizzlies by saying this, but if a lot of minor league teams are already kind of set up for social distancing, right? Like, you've got room when you go to a Grizzlies game that you could still sell the normal amount of tickets, and it feels to me like I can go to the Maverick Center and have space enough to feel safe in this pandemic.
Yeah. Did you bring that up to Jared?
I haven't brought it up to him yet, but we joked around about seat night, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, obviously, like, weekday games for us are tough, you know, drawing fans, but we rely on our weekend games and, those big nights like Military Night and Guns and Hoses and stuff like that, where we actually fill the building. So I think that's – those nights for us really move us along in the season, you know.
Yeah.
So I think for Jared, that's, not being able to – fill that rink on those, five, six nights a year, it's a big loss for the team. But I think if we can get playing, I'm not sure what we're under now. The governor just changed everything, basically.
Right.
We were allowed 3,000, I think. But oh, I'm really? Not. Yeah, and I don't know. By the time December 11th hits, who knows what that number will be, right? So.
Right. Well, my team is trying to go to Vegas to play in a tournament. And we had signed up for the tournament 3 months ago, and it was supposed to be held in October. And at the time, they were like, okay, we can do this. And then as it approached, it got closer, Vegas had a second outbreak or whatever, and they said, okay, we can no longer play games. So the tournament got moved from October to November. And then I was on the phone with the tournament director yesterday, and they said, no games can be allowed, but what we can do is a scrimmage. No fans in the building. We can do a scrimmage, but you can't have a referee, an official on the ice, but you can have a gamekeeper that doesn't blow a whistle, but can tell you to stop. And if there's a penalty, you get a penalty shot, but zero faceoffs. So like, if you score, they just got to throw the puck, and they're like, are you willing to do this? And so far, I guess 8 of the teams were like, hey, we're desperate for hockey, so we're in.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's just been a lot of desperation, a lot of change. And
it's like a game of pickup, right? If you're going out, you get scored on, you drag it out, and you just keep going. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the gamekeeper do? They just sit in
the maybe pull the puck out of the net, calls the unofficial penalties, maybe sets the puck down for a penalty shot.
So he's a ref without a whistle.
A ref without a whistle. That's basically what it is. Because we can't have whistles.
Why can't you have a whistle?
Because you'd be blowing coronavirus all over the ice.
All over.
Oh. I don't know. It's just one of those things. But I believe the NHL and even college football in the very beginning had those electric whistles. Do you remember that?
I don't know.
All right. How many of you guys – did you guys all watch the playoffs?
Yeah,
quite a bit of it.
So what did you think about the bubble? Mace, we'll start with you. What did you think about playing in the bubble, and what did you think about – I mean, because Portland plays – you guys have a pretty good fan base. What would it be like to play a pro-level game with no fans?
I don't know, and we kind of thought that our playoffs were going to be similar to that, but I was pretty skeptical headed into, like, the NHL playoffs and how it was going to be. But, like, right off the bat, I thought the guys were, like, unbelievable. Like, there was fights, hits, goals, like, it was nuts. Like, they adapted pretty well, and I think it's pretty obvious when guys at that level, like, they just want to win. They don't really care. But I mean, you hear stories like the first couple games, there's an adjustment on how quiet it was and all that. But also, like, when you're playing and it's that high of a level and everything's going so fast, when you're in the middle of a play, like, you don't really hear the outside noise anyway until after. So, like, I think it'd be weird probably sitting on the bench or, you know, in between whistles or whatever, but I mean, when you're playing, and it's just, you know, just how it is.
Yeah. Nick, what'd you think? Did you notice a drop in intensity, or did you just see it as intense right from the get-go?
I agree with Mason. I thought it was pretty intense right off the bat, and especially with no fans, you could almost hear and feel the game a little more. So it was definitely intense. I thought the NHL did a great job. I actually heard someone arguing the other day that, you know, the winner of this cup, Tampa, arguably had the hardest path to it because there was zero fan interaction and momentum swings like that. It was just pure hockey and, you know, best team goes on. So interesting perspectives, but like I said, I thought the NHL did a great job. And then I think a lot of people needed hockey in their life. So yeah, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I'd agree. Gary, what did you think? You watched a lot of games. We texted quite a bit back and forth.
Yeah, I thought it was great. You know, I mean, it's what, kind of like a practice. There's probably not a lot of fans up in the stands of practice, but like the other guy said, you know, once that's put in front of you, you know, here's our mission. This is my job. You know, you want to win a cup and you go for it. You know?
Yeah. Like I had no issues with it. Yeah. Watching it, I thought it was amazing. And then it was still fun. The other part of it that was kind of, like I said, we were texting back and forth, but we didn't get together and watch any games. And that's the other part of the COVID part is that there, you don't have guys over for a barbecue and a drink and watch the games. And it was just a lot of time. I turned to my wife who was reading a book, right? And she has, and I'd be like, oh, did you see that player? I'd say something about a goalie and she'd try to participate, but doesn't care. And yeah. It kind of takes the fun out of it, right? And it's just like, oh. Just
yelling at the TV. My kid's watching me. You know.
even though there's no fans, you could still see when the guys would score or a big moment. They're still super passionate. So fans or not, it was pretty cool to see them kind of give it their all.
Yeah, I loved hearing the fans cheer each, or the players cheer each other on during big hits and stuff too, or big saves. You could hear it coming from the fans, so or not from the fans, but from the players who are also fans, but supporting each other, right?
Yeah, I think they had that fan like noise, did they not?
Yeah, they did. Like,
yeah, they did a little bit.
Fan track that made it. They're doing it with baseball too.
Yeah,
see, and I'm against it.
I don't know. It just kind of makes it. There's that kind of just murmur during the play, you know, like there would be, I thought they did a great job. I thought it was fantastic, but obviously to have fans in the building for playoffs, there's some home ice advantage and stuff like that, but
right.
Good on those players. They're true professionals and they work their tails off for the end result. So,
yeah, I mean, it's similar. I don't want to compare it to being a soldier, but you're pulled away from your family and you're put in a hotel to do your job. Mm-hmm. And you didn't get to go home and see your family after the game or anything, unless you're a Tuca. And more is coming out about that, right? Like everybody, when that first happened, was like, well, he's not a fighter. He didn't care about his team. But now we're finding out that his daughter was critically ill and possibly wasn't going to live through the entire playoff series anyway. So I think more fans will forgive Tuca for that. Anybody else have take on that?
You would hope so, right? Like something that's serious. It's like family's always first, of course. That's what we're taught growing up. So something that's serious, you got to take care of that before anything.
I think you should have stayed out of the bubble. You know, if that was the issue, like everyone would have forgave him, right?
Right.
But obviously, nobody like it's family's first. But I think you should have. He should have just stayed out and been with his family from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. Possibly. I don't know exactly what the deal was, but yeah, it's
yeah,
it was a weird thing. It's got to be hard to know what the right choice is, but if it's your family, it's got to come first. And
yeah, either way, what he did was his decision, but and we don't know if she got sick while he was in the bubble. If she, you know, so it's you can't blame the guy for wanting to be with his family.
100%. It's crazy that people like judge him for that. I think it's like mind-boggling to me.
Well, first,
and people judge them at first, and like, you know, as a coach now, like when he made his announcement, because he was chirping the bubble, he was saying this isn't hockey, and he didn't come out and say right away it was family. Like if he would have said, "Listen, my daughter's sick at home," then he wouldn't have got the backlash, you know?
Yeah.
See, I agree with that, and that's one of the frustrating things about how they handle information in the NHL or any pro sports. They've gotten to the point now where they're like, oh, it's an upper body injury or whatever. And they don't tell you, and maybe it's not our business, but if anybody would have said, all right, this is what he's going through, then there would have been, I think there would have been zero backlash. Yeah. And maybe he wanted privacy, but you don't have that privacy anyway. No. People are going to be chirping about you and saying things about you, and your, and every Facebook, like every Boston fan probably said something on Facebook about him not being a good teammate or whatever. But that would have 100% flipped if they would have said, his daughter's super ill, he needs to be by her. And anybody with kids would have been like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
At least you'd hope. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the other stuff that's going on with the NHL and the free agency that's going nuts. And I made a comment yesterday on my Facebook, or actually 2 days ago, that it was hard to be a Knights fan. And then 3 days before that, I said something about, now what do I do with all my LA Kings shirts? And I get, it's funny the instant messages I get from people for one thing or another, being fans of two teams is one thing. And honestly, I just like the NHL, and I don't have a favorite team except for I have players that I really like. And I have not appreciated what the Golden Knights have done as far as how fast they fired their coach, how fast they seem to give up on Marc-Andre Fleury. And then I did not love the move they made to bring in Pietrangelo and get rid of Nate Schmidt. Granted, I don't know anything about running a team. I just know what I like as a fan. And then the biggest thing for us is seeing Trevor Lewis not getting re-signed. And I know that Nick probably can't comment very much on this since you're in the organization. But Gary, Ryan, Mason, what have you guys been thinking watching all this stuff go on? And what are your thoughts about the free agency frenzy, as they call it?
I think it's been pretty slow, to be honest. It seemed like you thought Pietrangelo would sign right away. Vegas is in, they're in a market where it's win now, you know, and I think with their ownership, they're going to continue to be that aggressive. And Nate Schmidt, great player. Yeah. But Pietrangelo is an upgrade for sure. In my, you know, he's a captain. He's won a cup. He's a high point producer. He's a right shot, skates well. I think it's a big upgrade, but they have had some, you know, disloyalty to some of their guys. I feel like they, but that's the business you're in, right?
I get that it's the business. I couldn't believe they didn't re-sign England.
I think he's too slow.
I get it, but he's also a Vegas-born guy, and I totally get it. Like I understand that it's, you know, you got to have the right pieces in the right places, or you're not going to make the playoffs, and you're not going to make money. But I thought they gave up on the coach way too fast, and I did not think the DeBoer was an upgrade.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I thought maybe there was a little. It just seems like they're quick to pull the trigger on those things. And Schmidt is a huge local hero there.
Yeah, and so is England. But I guarantee you, England has a development role within that organization. If he doesn't continue to play, you know,
right,
they'll definitely take care of him.
So, anybody have any guesses on one if Trevor lands somewhere, and if so, where?
Vegas.
Yeah. Do you think?
I could see it. It's close to home. Like.
Yeah. That's actually one of the things it's funny. I had tried to start writing articles for KSL, and every time I'd start before I got the thing finished, the move would happen because I'm a slow writer apparently. But they had I wrote an article about Fleury, and then things started happening right away. And then I was writing an article about that. I didn't think that the Sharks were going to re-sign Aaron Dell, and I didn't think that Trevor was going to get re-signed. And I submitted it, and then the next day it was already announced before it got through, because they have to fact check everything I say. And
spell check.
Spell check, grammar check. Sometimes I just make up words. That's what happens from working with John Carter for so long, right?
Yeah. Gary?
Just make up words. And anyway, those things didn't happen. So I started writing another article that I thought teams that were looking, because Trevor Lewis kind of has that Dustin Penner pedigree to him, where he is maybe a third or fourth line guy that seems to, you know, he's good at killing penalties, and he's good at drawing penalties, and he's a good energy guy, and they love him in the locker room. and he's got two cups. And that, and Dustin Penner turned that into like four more years in the NHL than he should have, in my opinion. And I can see Trevor being an essential piece to another team looking for this, that, that little spark plug in their locker room. Vegas, Dallas, and I thought possibly Vancouver. But I don't watch the East that much, I guess. Anybody else got guesses?
I don't know. It's hard to put a guess on something for us, but I think just watching him, like I was able to watch him, watch the team practice in Calgary. We were playing up there, and so we actually practiced right before them. And, I mean, he's – good thing about Trevor is, like, he works so hard. I think Nick could attest. We've worked out with him this summer. Like, he works hard. He's still in, like, tip-top shape. So, like, wherever he ends up, he's, it's going to be good for him. I think a fresh start would be good for him. And I think, you know, a team's going to benefit from a guy with his experience. So, no matter where he goes, he's going to be in a good spot, in my opinion.
Oh. Well, and if somebody reaches out for him, I think it's going to be a contender. So, he's going to go from a rebuilder to a contender. Yeah. So, in reality, this could be a real shot for him to get that third cup.
Yeah, and I'll probably, like Mason was saying, just revive his career too, because the last couple years in LA have been down years, obviously. They've been kind of rebuilding there. So you go to a Vegas or Dallas, you know, wherever he lands, a contender, that kind of sparks your interest again, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, so Nick, talk to us. Tell us, what do we have to look forward to from you, like what's going on with you and what do you know is going to be in your future here?
As far as just kind of the next couple months here, or like, yeah, my gameplay, or
when do you as of right now, when are you supposed to go to camp?
I think so they've come out with December 4th, right? But so that would put camp early-ish November, mid-November, but that's kind of looking like that's going to get pushed back because Bettman came out and talked about how they want to aim for like January-ish. So last I spoke with the GM, kind of everything filters down from them. So I think we're just going to follow suit. So whatever the NHL does, I think it's kind of a, you know, similar pattern as them. So if they push it back, I think I can expect to get pushed back. So hopefully, you know, earliest start, I mean, if they ended up somehow making a December 4th start date for us viable, that'd be incredible. So then I'd probably head out here in the next month or month and a half, but it's kind of looking like it's going to get pushed back a bit. So if that happens, then maybe a mid-December camp and then start date early January. And, you know, if it ends up getting pushed back even to late January, then it'd probably be January start date and then go from there. But in the meantime, yeah, just trying to stay busy, keep my head, keep training. Thanks to, you know, Knasiewicz, he's really helped out a ton, and those skates are really helpful and competitive and practice game like so a lot better than, you know, kind of, I mean, we had some good skates going, but it wasn't nearly as, it's a lot different. We have someone out there running the drills that's not participating, because, you know, I think it makes it harder and whatnot. But from me, I think I've been getting strong all summer, and I think I'm a quick, shifty forward that can add a dynamic piece to, you know, a number of lines, and I can play with a bunch of different players, I think. So I'm excited to just get started. You know, I miss hockey so much, and I'm sick of doing concrete work, so.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I do have an opening on my men's league team. I mean, we could use a shifty forward. It sounds like you've got some time going. So.
Yeah.
Mason. I know you're same boat. I want to talk to you one thing about the WHL before we get into what you're doing. Was there a rumor that the WHL was going to be a pay-to-play? Like you were, because I don't know if a lot of people know, but major juniors, you have to pay to play. You get paid while you're there, and they pay for your billet. But I know there was some contemplation that in order for the WHL to continue, or all the Canadian hockey leagues, they were going to have to pay to play. Have they said anything about that to you?
No, I've had a couple of people ask me about that, but they haven't said anything remotely close to that. So as far as us, the players know, I haven't heard anything about that. So I guess time will tell, but as of now, no.
Mason, what were you saying the other day in the locker room about like a non-contact CHL league, or what were you saying there?
So I'm sure everyone – yeah, so like the OHL has like – they proposed a no body check rule, or like you can't check or something, in the queue. They have like a three-fight.
No, I was going to say, I thought the queue was no check anyway.
Yeah. I guess it is nowadays. That's kind of – that's the stereotype they get, especially from all the guys in the West. But
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the thing. Are you going to talk about that? Yeah, I've seen a thing to where that's what the governor or whatever they are up there, that's what they wanted. And then the queue, they have like a – it's like a 5-10 for a fight now. And if you fight more than three times in the season, you face suspension. So times are changing, man. It's weird. But as far as our league, nothing different right now. So
you don't know that they're called the premier up there? The you don't know anything
about,
nothing about Canada or what?
Nope, I'm an American. I didn't stick to that.
He plays in a Canadian league, but he still plays in America, so he's been sheltered from
that. No problem staying American.
So. All right, so I know you've been staying busy this summer. You're doing electrical work for your dad, and then you're also you've got your own little business going, right?
Yeah, I do. I started it. I think I launched January 1st of this year. So it's called Buck Tough Outfitters. I try to. It's hard. So during the year, it's kind of hard to balance. You know, it's so much hockey that sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, and so a lot of guys like video game stuff, but it never was my thing. And so I found myself constantly trying to find something to do. And then the idea came upon me. I was able to start my own clothing line. And right now it's clothes. And eventually I want to get into hunting gear, fishing gear, stuff like that. So I'm super outdoorsy. My family loves to spend time outdoors. So I tried to tie that in. And that way when I get home from the rink, I can work on that and also not have to rely on my parents for money anymore. And so I guess it's kind of part of growing up, but it's been awesome. You know, I met a lot of great people, and I just, you know, hope to grow from here. So
are you still you got to go home every day and pack boxes and go drop stuff off for shipping and print labels?
Yeah, that's the easy part, honestly. I like that part. The hardest part I found is the marketing aspect, social media, stuff like that. That's never been like my thing really, so it's been interesting trying to broaden my spectrum to market to certain audiences and find new people and, you know, meet new people. But meeting new people has been awesome. That's been one of the coolest parts about it, is I've, you know, grown a lot of great relationships. So
very cool. Well, like I said, I have to get it approved, but I think we can put the put your website on our when we post this interview. And it's bucktough.com.
Bucktoughoutfitters.com.
Bucktoughoutfitters.com. So if you guys are looking, he's got lots of cool stuff. I see all your posts, I follow you on all that stuff, and then obviously like, you know, seeing you and your friends and your parents out there wearing the gear, and that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Very cool to see that going. So Ryan, what do we expect from the Grizzlies now? We heard Nick saying that they might be pushed back. Are we sure that I think the East Coast League's not going to be affected by that?
Anything can change, you know, you know what kind of year we're in. We have been sent a schedule, like as a staff and organization. I don't think it's out yet, but that schedule is only 10 games before January 15th, before the other teams would join. So it's promising. If it goes, awesome. If it doesn't, you know, we'll probably get pushed back into the new year. But I'm hoping that we're able to go. So
we're all hoping.
Yeah. It'd be nice.
Come to some games.
Yeah. Just be nice to, I mean, we've been going to the rink quite a bit lately, so we're kind of getting back into somewhat normal routine, trying to get ready for this. So that's been nice. Weather's still pretty good. So trying to get out and golf too. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sick invites. I guess I missed those. I'll have to check my inbox. Maybe you're going to join.
Oh, I played with you a couple of years ago. I don't know if you can hang. So.
No, I can't. I can't hang. But if I remember right, it was Tim Branham putting them all into people's yards.
Yeah. I think
at least I was just on the wrong fairway.
You were on the wrong, yeah. Tim usually puts them in people's backyards and on I-215. And
adventures in golf. I like it. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just down the street from my house, and I know everybody's going to know exactly what I'm talking about, on the Murray Parkway Golf Course, they just built all these houses right kind of in this little inlet that goes into the golf course off 6400 South. And I'm like, What are you thinking? That's got it. Those houses, they're like $600,000, and they got to just be eating golf balls from guys like me.
What hole is it on?
Oh, I don't know. That back one that goes straight up 6,100.
Something 17.
Yeah.
One of the later holes, right?
Yeah. 17. Okay, yeah.
It's one that I know that you get to and you're like, all right, there's a – I'm going to chip this, and you think you're going to hit a 10-foot chip, and then I typically shank the ball and put the 10-foot chip about 30 feet the other way, so right into those houses, right where those houses are now.
It's a great strategy.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll bounce back now.
Yeah, never know.
Like volleyball.
Yeah.
All right, Gary, so what do we got to look forward from you and your kids for hockey? What's going on?
Well, you know, it's obviously great just to have hockey, you know, and the kids being able to get back into somewhat of a routine, even, you know, even if you got to wear a mask around and stuff, that's nothing. That doesn't bother them, but they don't really know as far as any sort of travel what's going to happen this season, you know. It's,
yeah, because every state's different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Idaho's been here, and they played in Park City a couple weeks ago, and they had a little tournament, and so it was Idaho's been here, and Vegas has been here, but as the Grizzlies haven't traveled anywhere yet. So, but they are putting together some stuff. I think our first tournament for the 14U team is December.
And then you play in the men's league thing, right? Like you play the men's. Tell me, just pump that a little bit so guys understand what that is. And because I know a lot of people are looking, and you guys are actually playing. So you have
the MHL 40 thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, my father-in-law runs that, and it's just, you know, it's no refs. It's kind of like a pickup. You know, there's four teams, and you play about 12 games, and it's at the Maverick Center, and it's 9:45 or 10:15, and. You know, just before you would always have tons of guys missing, right? Before the Rona, you know, it was like guys are like, too late, man. Now, full bench, every game, everybody's excited to be there. And it's cool. It's fun. It's I think we've had about six games so far.
Oh, yeah. And that's MHL 40. And if guys are still looking, they can find that somewhere. Or is it too late to sign up?
Find it on Facebook.
Okay.
There's a page there.
And I'll tell you, you're exactly right about that. The whole, like, you just take advantage of whatever ice you can get. And they're like, hey, we need a goalie to play at 11 o'clock in Ogden. And I can't sign up fast enough. All the other goalies are like, I got it. I'll take it. Because it's just like, you're just fighting for anything you can get right now. I've been driving to Park City on Tuesdays and Thursdays for their drop-in just because it's the only actual drop-in that I know of.
Hallerman and Mason can use Brand some of the big headshots.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm one step better than a pylon. But that's
where you're happy with pylons.
Yeah, pylons are – well, I'm one step – I have nicer gear than a pylon.
Yeah.
A pylon will probably stop more shots. Because sometimes I don't want to get hit. You know how it is.
Good locker room guy, though.
Oh, I'm good in the locker room, yeah.
Okay.
Invite me up. I'm entertaining at least.
Yeah.
You guys got some dad jokes now.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, on the next episode, we're going to probably touch base with you guys again. We're going to try and get in touch with Shannon Smith and Chris Billiter and find out what's going on with rec leagues here and see if men are going to get – if the men's leagues are going to get going and find out everything else that's going. We hope that something happens right away and that next week when I call you guys, you're like, I'm too busy – because I got to get ready to go play actual hockey with, you know, an actual league. So we're rooting for all of you. Mason, I know this is an important year for you this is your final year juniors, and you just had guys on your team getting drafted. But what is that like to watch the draft, by the way, and watch your teammates go in the first, second, and third rounds? Is that amazing? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's cool to see, you know, the backside of it when I, you know, play at them all year, see them, you know, work as hard as they do. Like, I tell you, that Jarvis kid, he's unbelievable. I think he's going to be a great player in the NHL. From the guys that I've played against, he's probably one of the best. So he's going to be awesome. But it's cool, you know. It's like some of your buddies, you're seeing him on NBC. You know, it's pretty surreal. But
then we talked about Vegas a lot. I've been reading that Glass is, you know, a big part of their plans this year. And that was one of your teammates your first year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, cool. I mean – I know he's battled some injuries, but when he's healthy, he's He's pretty phenomenal. He's got vision, like insane vision. So, I mean, he's going to be great as well as long as he can stay healthy.
Well, perfect. Perfect. Well, hopefully he'll wear some Buck Tough Outfitter stuff on some of
the Yeah. Okay. I'll have to give him a call.
All right, guys. I can't thank you guys enough for being on the show. And we're excited about season 3. We know it's going to be turbulent and unpredictable. Gary, do you have anything else to add?
No, man. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to a good year. Hopefully we can all get back and stay healthy.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Anybody else have anything they want to say before we end the recording?
All good.
All right. Thanks again, guys. And that is the Utah Puck Report.